I really love the two pieces we're reading for this particular session this week. I think they are not only interesting in and of themselves, but in a broader context, I think both Walcott's The Sea is History and the opening sections of Edouard Glissant's Poetics of Relation are among the most important readings and most important reflections we find in the second half of the 20th century. Walcott's poem, The Sea is History, it comes from his collection, The Star Apple Kingdom, and it's written a decade and a half or so before the Poetics of Relation is published. And that poem, its title, but also its motif, The Sea is History, is, of course, the epigraph of Glissant's Poetics of Relation, and in many ways tells the story of the opening pages of that text. Tells the story of the opening pages of that text because Glissant, and I'll say more about this in a moment, of course, Glissant's reflections on the middle passage are really his signature contribution, to my mind, his singular contribution to the late 20th century in the Caribbean intellectual tradition, but also broadly in the Black Atlantic tradition. His reflections on the middle passage and the way it draws from Walcott gives such profound depth to understanding historical catastrophe. And I don't know that Poetics of Relation could have been written without Walcott's poem. Walcott's poem is, I think, deceptively straightforward. It's deceptively straightforward in that it's not a wordy poem. It doesn't have a particularly complicated structure. And it tells, in some ways, a very straightforward and simple story, which is an archaeology, a story that is essentially an archaeology of the Atlantic, floor of the Atlantic Sea, Atlantic Ocean. And that archaeology is important for a few reasons. One is that it is the experience that actually makes sense of or gives rise to this very concept of the new and the new world. So that archaeology of the seabed, of the bottom of the sea, is a story of history. It's a story of the history of the new world, of making that new world out of the ruins of conquest. Conquest, of course, in the Caribbean context, is that moment of completely eliminating the indigenous population through disease and warfare and repopulating the islands with enslaved Africans. That moment of repopulation in the wake of genocide is what the new of New World means. What the world of the New World means is something that the Poetics of Relation picks up in some detail. But that first moment, or moment of importance for Walcott's poem, I think really lies in that experience of history, that you cannot tell the history of the New World without the bottom of the sea. Also, that bottom of the sea is not only Walcott's engagement with history, right? That you can't tell the history of the new world or the world of the new world without such a contemplation, but also that for Walcott, it is a memory project. That is, he is not engaging it as a documentary or empirical history, of course. That's why it's a poem and it's not a text or even a critical essay. It's a poem because it has a special charge to it. And that special charge to it is to register in a memorial voice, in that voice of a memory that encounters the intimacy of the question of the bottom of the sea. The intimacy of that inside Black Caribbean or Afro-Caribbean identity. In that way, and this is the sort of third thing I wanted to pick up in terms of the significance of the poem, is that it's an ethical exercise, right? Or it's held to and holds itself to this notion of, not this notion, this sense of an ethical right? Not just of an obligation, but of a sensitivity and an understanding that if this is a memory project, if the poem is a memory project, it's a memory project that requires a sensitivity to what it carries and to what it makes visible and cannot make visible. So one of the ways for me to assess the poem is to not just think about, is it well put together in terms of form? Does it have a beauty or a disturbance, you know, a sublimity to it? But also, and I think really firstly, does it engage with the question of loss, trauma, and ancestry in a way that's sensitive to what it means to be the carrier of that memory, the carrier of the nameless? And for me, this is a difficult question, and I think requires a whole other set of conversations, some of which really are in poetics of relation, but requires a different kind of poetics, right? A conversation about a poetics, a conversation about how do we think about, how do we talk about the past when that past is literally unrepresentable? We can't represent the bottom of the sea. There's so much imagery of the seafloor in the sea as history, but none of it is names, none of it is direct description. All of it is evocation. And in its evocation, I think it's safe to say that in its evocation, nothing becomes present, yet everything also does become present. And that play for me between what it can't say, what the poem cannot say, but what it also must say, is the challenge of for us as readers. How do we carry as readers the depth and intensity of the word of memory? And it's a weight of word and memory, and a call it a burden, we could call it a challenge, we can call it a commandment to carry the dead with us. But the dead not as the dead in memory, but the dead who fail to come to memory, yet must be memorialized. This sort of necessary impossibility, it's a paradox, it's a contradiction, but it's what we are left with when we think seriously about the Middle Passage, and that's exactly what Walcott's poem does. It is the epigraph to Poetics of Relation, because Poetics of Relation starts and has its foundation in a contemplation in the first four, five, six pages, contemplation of the sea as an abyss. He talks about that abyss, Clissant does, in three stages. One is the abyss of falling into the belly of the boat, right? It's the abyss of loss of homeland, a loss of that ancestral root, a loss of a sense of connection to Western Africa, right, to the coast of Africa, to the continent of Africa, and to Africanness itself. And so falling into the belly of the boat, as he puts it, is really this description of the exit from roots, the exit from a sense of connection to place. The second abyss, then, is the sea itself, that moment of literally sitting in the belly of a boat above a bottomless abyss, right? A sense of death literally surrounding you, but also being in a kind of state of suspended life or suspended death or suspended between the two, which is the belly of the boat. And then the third sense of the abyss is that moment of arrival or the shoreline, that arrival to a place where one has no root, one has no sense of connection, one has no sense of place, and arrives as an enslaved person under the violence, not only physical, but psychological violence, cultural violence, political violence of enslavement and then colonialism. And the two go hand in hand. They are not separate phenomena, of course. So one of the things that the sea as history is trying to document, the poem, as well as the opening piece of Poetics of Relation, is trying to open up this question of what it means to think, what it means to create in a space, the archipelago, the Caribbean, the New World, what it means to be and what it means to create, what it means to know in a place where one does not have ancestral roots in the sense of that ancestry in Africa, right? That the sea, like loss, the bottom of the sea, that sense of loss and bones and coral on the seabed. How is, if that is history, how do we think about a relationship to place? How do we think about a relationship to place in the Caribbean as Caribbeans? And this is Glissant's task from the very beginning, is to think about Caribbeanness as a critical concept and also a word for a different way of imagining identity. In thinking of it as a different way of imagining identity, I think we could see Glissant not only, you know, drawing on Walcott's The Sea is History poem, but also from his Antilles, Fragments of Epic Memory essay, and also The Muses of History, both of those essays by Walcott, both of which contemplate this idea of beginning and making and being after catastrophic loss, after the eradication and the denial of repudiation of any sense of roots. So how can we make sense of, or what is this idea of having no roots, of being rootless, yet having a sense of place, yet having a sense of territory, yet having a sense of belonging, yet having a sense that this landscape is not just critical, but is constitutive of who and what one is as a person and as a collectivity. That's why this, the sort of after the opening section on the abyss, this turn towards Deleuze and Guattari, two really important European thinkers for Glissant and his transformation of them, and the question of the rhizome is so important, but also his really precise characterization of this notion of nomad. And in thinking about rhizome and nomad, Glissant is talking about subjectivity, what it means to be a subject. In that way, he draws that also just directly from Deleuze and Guattari, who in their co-authored work, it's actually a two-part work, Capitalism and Schizophrenia and 1,000 Plateaus. That's why their work in the European context is about revolutionary politics. It's about reimagining, you know, a different way of relating as a community in a sort of anarchist register. But for Glissant, it's not really a political strategy or an abstraction in any way. It is rather this notion of the rhizome, but also this notion of nomad, a direct description of what it means to be as Caribbean, what Caribbeanness is as a characteristic, not just of an individual, but as a collectivity, and also as a relationship to history and memory. This notion of the rhizome is really interesting to me because one of the things it picks up on is our previous discussion of and reflections on landscape and nature, that thinking about a relationship to the earth, right? Not necessarily in the mode of eco-criticism, but maybe an element of eco-criticism as that work here. I mean, certainly Glissant doesn't use the language of eco-criticism, but I think we could play with that for sure. But when Glissant is talking about the rhizome, he is talking about a way of relating to land, relating to landscape, relating to territory and place that honors and takes seriously and stays intimately close to and faithful to this really important notion of being unrooted by the Middle Passage, but refuses to think of Caribbeanness as fundamentally alienated or alienating. And the rhizome is important because what a rhizome is a plant. All right, we've already entered now into to at least metaphors and images of the natural world. The The rhizome has multiple roots. And the key part is that it lives from multiple roots, and that if one is cut off, or one is poisoned or harmed or clipped or disabled in some way, the organism, you know, potato, for example, which is a rhizome, it continues to live because all those roots give multiple forms of sustenance to the, in this case, the organic being, right? The rhizome itself. And so when Walcott is talking in the Antilles essay about all of these features of being Caribbean or of Caribbean life, you know, that whether it's India or the indigenous or Africa or Europe or the Middle East, in each of these moments, you know, for Walcott, that's about fragments that are then reassembled, that famous image of the vase. But one of the ways Glissant is playing with that same notion of fragmentation is to say that each and every one of these forms a root. But not a root, not the root from which everyone lives, but rather one of multiple roots, all of which sustain life, and none of which are necessary and sufficient conditions for life. That is, if one root dies or one root is not present or fails in some way to activate, the other roots sustain life. And this, for Glissant, is important because now we have to think about subjectivity as multiple rooted. And so really even how to call this identity an identity is already a conceptual question and puzzle. Because if we're thinking about what identity is, we usually think about an identity as that one root that makes me or us who we are or who I am. And when I say that one root, that means that if that root isn't there, I cease to exist, or I exist as a completely different person. And, you know, we tend to think of race and ethnicity this way, where we think about a racial category as the thing that roots us in the world, you know, for good or bad or a mixture of all of it. But when that root is gone, we're in a point of crisis. So you can think, for example, if your family, you know, spent its whole life saying that they are, I don't know, Italian, and then you find out actually the family is Russian, not Italian, right? Now all of a sudden, like, who and what the family is and who and what you are as an individual in relation to your family is really upended, because so much of how you understood your life and the collective life of, in this case, a family, was connected to that single root. And so if that root dies, you come to a point of crisis. Who and what am I? How am I supposed to think about who and what I am? But what Glissant is saying is that a direct description, not a proposal, not a theory, a direct description of Caribbeanness is multi-rooted. And no single root can dominate or tell the story of Caribbean identity. So in some ways, that word Caribbeanness, or that word Caribbean as an identity word, is already, I don't want to say it crosses itself out, but it sort of crumbles and falls apart as any kind of stable identity, because its stability is not going to come from the one thing that it is, the one thing that it names. Rather, Caribbeanness is going to have meaning insofar as all of those roots are at play. And how are they at play? They are in play as, he says when he, at the very end of the first section, when he says we must honor our boats. This is part of the honoring of the boats, is that all of those roots are essential to Caribbeanness, right? They're an essential part of the story of Caribbeanness. Although some die, some are stronger than others for different people or different collectivities. But in the end, they are all part of that story, right? And so part of what the poet can do, part of what the novelist can do, is give a really rich and varied and deep account of these multiple roots. When you start to think about a rhizomatic model of subjectivity, in some ways it mandates that the ontology of the subject, that is an account of its very being, is going to have to come from poets and novelists, because it requires that you tell a story about who and what a subject is, rather than give it a proper name and a definition. That's what it means to have multiple roots, is that you have to understand them and also be attentive, understand all of them together, right? How they all sustain one and the same organism, but also how none of those dominate, how none of them are the same in terms of their strengths and weaknesses across islands, across collectivities, across families even. And so when we think then about Caribbeanness as multi-rooted, we can see why Glissant talks about exile, errantry, and the nomad as having this erratic sense of movement. So his figuration of Afro-Caribbean, or just Caribbean subjectivity, is really that sense of erratic movement, errantry, right? That it doesn't have the one true path, doesn't have the one true content. That those senses of single root and fixed content to subjectivity, right, is a misplaced description of the Caribbean. So it's a misplaced concept if we ask Caribbean identity to answer to that, because that would be what he calls elsewhere, and we'll talk about this especially after the break. Talks about it in terms of a continental notion of identity rather than an archipelagic notion of identity. Archipelagic being fragments, being multiple roots, being rhizomatic, being the nomad who wanders. Whereas the continental it's a continent, it's a single place, it has strict enclosed borders rather than the archipelago, which has open, spaced out borders, right? But even that continental, we have to stop and ask, and I'll just leave it as a question here. We have to ask how much that idea of identity, the idea that there is a single root and it's in a continent of some kind, whether it's Africa or Europe or Asia or wherever we name this thing called a continent, maybe that itself is a myth. Maybe that itself, this notion of a single root, obscures something more complicated about the origins of all places. I want to pause that question, partly because I think it comes up in the second half of Poetex of Relation. It's also a major question for Antonio Benitez Rojo in The Repeating Island, which we'll be talking about as well. But in terms of a contrast, and contrast can be incredibly helpful, in terms of a contrast, it's that fantasy of a single root versus the reality of multiple roots. And by changing our paradigm of thinking, Glissant is really honoring, and this is what I'll leave this with, is really honoring this sense of the Middle Passage as an event. And what I mean by event is a thing that appropriates all of our thinking, so that we have to think in the way that we live after the Middle Passage, speaking here in the voice of Caribbean, right? We have to think in the wake of the Middle Passage and what it has given to us for thinking. And what the Middle Passage gives to thinking is utter decimation, but also a sense of a reconstruction of life drawing on these multiple grounds, these multiple roots, these multiple fragments, these multiple elements that come together to form a thing called Caribbeanness and Caribbean subjectivity. And it means pushing against or pushing away from this notion of myth and epic. Because myths and epics tell these stories of the founding of nations, the founding of a people. And we find that a lot in our everyday language, where we sort of look to even something like the Middle Passage as if it were an epic or a myth. But one of the things Glissant is really trying to get away from is how those tellings of myths and epics lead us to think about identity in terms of a single root, because the myth or the epic articulates that root, right? Literature is always at the origins of nation and identity. literature is always at the foundation of nation and identity, because we have to have a story that binds us together. And Glissant wants to shift the paradigm of that story, partly because that's an anti-colonial struggle, is to tell the Caribbean story on its own terms and not in reference to the colonial story of identity. But also because in that anti-colonial move, right, Glissant wants to honor, I mean, that's his phrase, right? His phrase about honor the boats is honor the work of ancestry, not ancestry in Africa, but ancestry on the plantation, ancestry in terms of what people made in the New World under atrocious, catastrophic conditions of enslavement and colonialism. But that has generated and made a world. And when we see that it has made a world, we have to have a comprehensive account of it. Where does it come from? What's its history? Its history is the sea. Its history is the three abyss structure. And how do we understand who and what we are? It's a rhizomatic and nomadic, erratic sense of the nomad, not a straight line nomad, but an erratic sense of the nomad, where both the nomad and the rhizome are defined by not just their capacity, but their commitment to thinking about identity and thinking about being on the terms that the Caribbean is given and that the Caribbean works with. The key, and this is where I'll end, is that Glissant's Codex of Relation wants to explain that new model or new paradigm of thinking for the simple reason that if we do not articulate it as a full paradigm and employ it as a way of thinking about Caribbean identity, then Caribbean identity, because it is irreducibly rhizomatic and nomadic, that when it appears as rhizomatic and nomadic without this alternative paradigm, it will always seem derivative of and less than the single-rooted model that comes from the continental mode of thinking, Africa, but also, of course, most emphatically, Europe. And when we live in that comparison, we become less than who we truly are, because we diminish our own being by measuring it according to a different historical experience, the historical experience of Europe or the historical experience of Africa, rather than working from the historical experience of the Caribbean, which no matter how abject it is, no matter how terrifying it has been, it's also been a place that was able to generate, sustain, and create life and world. What is that world? How do we understand its life forms? How do we understand its energy, where it derives its meaning from? And how do we characterize its general structure? That's the question of the Poetics of Relation.